Hey, this is Larry Goins. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good, Larry.
Good so far.
Awesome, awesome. Glad you made it on the call. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And I just want to jump right in. I know we got quite a few people on, so if anybody has a question, go ahead and throw it out there, and we'll get started right away.
I've got an indirect question, Larry. I sent off a testimonial to your office, but I'm not sure if I have the proper email address. I was wondering if you had that handy.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, who is this?
Steve from Canada, Steve and Jan.
Yes, I did receive that, but I was my father-in-law was in town today, and I was out about half the day, took him to the airport and stuff, so I did see that, and I read over it quickly, but I didn't get a chance to respond to it today.
Not a problem. I'm just glad to see I got it to the right area.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that. That was a very nice testimonial. That was great.
You.
I really appreciate all your kind words.
Well, you've done a lot for us, so.
Well, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. We do try. That's for sure. Well, good. Anybody have a question or anything you want to throw out there?
Quiet. Yeah.
Well, some people like to sit back and listen. Some people don't really have questions. They just want to get on. But that's the purpose of this, is to be able to provide, you know, Q&A for people who do need it in between, you know, coaching calls or whatever. Anybody have anything you're working on that you want to share?
Well, I'm working on a property down in South Carolina in Salem. It's actually under rental right now. So.
Awesome.
I brought it through your VIP service.
Great. That's good. Well, I hope it's going well.
Well, we'll find out in a few more weeks.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, I don't know if you guys get my CD of the month, but I created a CD of the month this month that the title of it was Should I Flip This House? Because there's a lot of people out there that think real estate is easy, you know, and there's a lot of people out there make it sound easy, but it's not. It can be difficult, and you will lose money on deals. It's not a matter of if, but when, you know, so you just got to be careful and take all that into consideration.
Right. Yeah, your CD of the month, is that on the web page?
Hello.
It's normally mailed out to people who are members of the coaching club.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's I've had a lot of people tell me that, you know, they're really concerned about you know, doing rehabs and that sort of thing, and you know, the contractor estimates come in higher than normal, you know. So I just figured it was time that I do that and tell people that, you know, real estate is not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And I even showed examples of, you know, of the 800,000 I have in inventory right now of properties that are on the market that we're retailing. You know, I think I'm going to lose money on one or two of them. And I've been doing this 20-some years.
Oh.
So you never know, you know.
Is that because of the market change in the States?
Well, not necessarily the market change, but, you know, you always have properties that rehab estimates go over and things like that. You just never know what's going to happen. So it's just very important to just be careful and do the best you can, and you're not going to make as much money as you think you are, you know, on deals, but... But you do end up losing money on deals every once in a while.
Certainly, we all just have to hope it's the start.
Exactly. Does anybody have any other questions?
Well, there's a noise on the line.
Yeah, there's a little bit of feedback. It sounds like somebody just got on a minute ago. Maybe you didn't mute your line, but there it went away. So anybody else have any questions or anything you'd like to share?
So this is Eureka. Losing money.
Hey, Eureka, how you doing?
I'm okay, hanging in there. You know, nothing yet, but I'm hanging in there. So losing money on the real estate deals, property, is something that we should be concerned about.
Is it something you should be concerned about?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. What I was primarily talking about was rehabbing properties.
Oh, rehabbing, okay.
Rehabbing properties. Now, don't get
Andy
me wrong.
And Lori,
I've lost money on deals that I thought I was going to wholesale. But that's been a long time. But when you're rehabbing properties, the market changes, the neighborhoods, the community changes. You end up spending more money on rehab than you thought. Sometimes it ends up taking you longer to sell a property than you thought it was. Sometimes the agent's going to come in and say, hey, we need to lower the price, or we need to offer an incentive or pay the seller's closing cost. And then sometimes you come in and you get buyers that make you offers on your properties, and that's just the way it is. I mean, it's but all you do is you can do the best you can do, and when you're rehabbing properties, don't do more than one at a time until you get the hang of it and you got the stomach for it. So just be careful with that if you're rehabbing properties. That's just very, very important.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It makes sense. That's good
to
know.
Good. That's good.
Hey, Larry, Glenn Goss from South Florida. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Just to kind of dovetail on what you were speaking about, would it be fair to say that one's return of the investment is more important than return on the investment?
Well, it's just as important. You know,
yep.
I just did a recording, and I'm going to put it up on my website, actually, because I think it's that important. But I just did a recording about, and I don't know if you just hopped on, but about, you know, rehabbing. And I actually titled the talk, Should I Flip This House? And, you know, we've had people that have, you know, come in and bought two or three different properties at the same time, not necessarily just from us, but, you know, maybe one from us, maybe one or two others on their own, maybe one or two from somebody else. But, you know, and Glenn, you're really good. You know, I'm really glad you're on here because, you know, you've done some deals. You've experienced this. And you know from experience that rehabs run over and properties take longer to sell than, you know, than you think they are. And sometimes you got to lower the price and stuff. So that's very, very important. For just everybody to remember that, you know, whether I sell you a house or somebody else sells you a house or you find it on your own or whatever, you know, if you think, okay, this house is worth 100 and I'm going to have 70 in it, well, you're not going to make 30 on it. You know, you might put it on the market at 95, you know, to get a quick sale or a quicker sale. You might end up spending another 5 than you thought you were going to, or the repairs. You might end up getting an offer of 85, you know, or 90. You might end up getting an offer of 90, but they want you to pay the closing costs. They want you to buy their rate down. They want you to carry a 5% second. You know, there's a lot of different variables, but I tell people that you can never make a mistake taking a profit. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to lose money on a deal, but I even had a student a while back who got an offer on a house that they bought, and they're like, oh, no, I'm only going to make $15,000. I'm not taking this offer. I'm not taking this offer. I'm only going to make $15,000 on it. Well, you know, what happened was they financed that property with hard money, and and they didn't take that offer or didn't push that offer through and negotiate it and at least try to get them up a little bit or whatever. But the bottom line is they turned it down, and now, you know, 6 months later, they're sitting on the house and they're getting ready to give it back to the lender. Well, that's my whole point, and you could never make a mistake taking a profit. Because,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts about that, Glenn?
Well, I've been in that situation, and my thoughts are exactly that. As a matter of fact, it's funny that you should bring that up because I know you've moved. The first property I ever bought from you almost 2 years ago, that property on Lane Crest Drive in Charlotte, North Carolina, I actually rehabbed that one and did a lease purchase on it. And for the first time, I actually had a lease purchase fall through. I used to do a lot of those years ago. And I had to go ahead and go back in there after the tenant fixed it up a little bit, and I put it on the market. And it was on the market for another 4 months after I rented it out for a year and a half. Certainly didn't lose money on it, but at the end of the day, I had a buy-and-hold investor come in and actually buy it from me, and I sold to him under market value for a couple of reasons. First off, it was in a neighborhood in transition, so I actually made less on the house than I expected. And to your point, I could be sitting on the house another 3 months later. And that sale actually closed last week.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, but that's a prime example of what you're saying. It was, just put round numbers, it was an $80,000 to $85,000 house. I sold it for $74,000, and I was happy to sell it at $74,000, given all the circumstances. And to your point, never look down on any profit. And at the end of the day, for anybody that's holding properties, when you think about holding a property longer than a year, your capital gains is almost cut in half. You have rents coming in. So at the end of the day, I made a very nice profit on that overall. But if you just look at the buy versus the sell, one might say that it wasn't all that profitable. But for me, it was. So and to bring it full circle, my return on investment was very nice. But it's quite frankly, you want to get your investment back at a minimum and call it a day. You hate to lose money. So if you buy it right, you may make less of a profit, but at the end of the day, your investment's going to be protected, at least in my opinion.
Exactly. And just expect the unexpected. Expect that your rehab estimate's going to go over. Expect that you might get an offer for less than list, and you might end up taking it. Okay. I had another student who emailed me a few weeks ago and said he had an offer of 88% of the list price, and was really disappointed that, it was 88%. Hey, if you get something with real close to 90% of list price, in my opinion, hey, that's a great starting point, and I would put that deal together. I would make sure, if that's their offer, I would put that together. Even if I ended up at 89 or 90%, I would make that deal work.
Yeah. And I just want to add one thing, Larry, and to what I was saying before, because there's participants on the call. Maybe they weren't exactly clear on what I was doing. I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that it took me 2 years to sell this property. I bought this property specifically as a longer-term buy-and-hold property.
Right.
And one of my buy-and-hold strategies are to do lease purchases or what's otherwise known as rent-to-own. I don't do long-term rentals, but what I do is on at least two or three times a year, I will do rent-to-owns where I buy a property, fix it up, and I rent it to a deserving buyer or couple that want to work their way into owning the home. And so otherwise, I could have sold that house 2 or 3 months after I finished rehabbing it almost 2 years ago. But in this particular case, I sold it under market value because I had the right buyer come along at the right time under the right circumstances, just as I had an owner-buyer tenant move out of it. So everything was pretty much preordained, but I was just making a point that I took less on this house specifically so I could actually move out of my portfolio and make room for another one because it already served its purpose. So
exactly.
This was a buy and hold. This was what I call a short-term buy and hold investment, and that's really what it was all about on this one.
Well, that's good. Thanks for clarifying that. I appreciate that.
Sure.
That was really good. But yeah, I think everybody should be, should have some of each in your portfolio or in your scheme of things, what you're doing at any given time. I think it's very, very important to do, different kinds of investing. And, like we do some seller financing at any given time. We're doing some fix and flips at any given time. We're doing some rehabs, you know, wholesaling rehabs, some seller finance deals, and some keepers at any given time. And I think it's very, very important that you just, you know, like the more tools you have in your toolbox to understand the type of deals that are available, the more you're going to be able to make and the more different kind of deals you're going to be able to do, whether it is wholesaling or retailing or doing lease options or short sales or subject to or seller financing or whatever. The more tools you have in your tool belt, the more deals you'll be able to do, which means the more money you're going to make. But don't think it's the end of the world and want to get out of the business if you lose money on a deal, because I can tell you this, you will lose money on a deal, all right? You will lose money on a deal. Hopefully it's not going to be your first one, but you will lose money on a deal. I lose money on deals. But overall, I make a lot of money on all the deals as you look at them as a long-term strategy. It's just like, it's no different than rental property. If you have rental property, you're going to have a few properties that are going to be losing you money. But in the overall scheme of things, as a long-term way to build wealth, overall, over the years, you're going to make a lot of money in your rental properties, and you're going to have really good cash flow, and overall, you're going to have a good return. That might be hard to see if you got a few rental properties and you got two or three of them vacant, you know, right now, and you got to go in and put paint and carpet or whatever in them. You know, it might be a little hard to see, but overall, you know, time is going to help you with your long-term rate of return on that, if that makes sense. So, having said that, anybody have any questions or anything you want to throw out there?
Yeah. Hey, Larry, how are you? It's Alan from New York. How are you doing, man?
What's going on, buddy? How you been?
I'm good. I am working, so I have a few minutes here. Hopefully, if I do get called, I have to get going off the phone. But just
I
to touch base,
how long have
you
been
said,
on the line, by the way?
About 10 minutes.
Oh, okay, good. So you did hear some of what we were talking about.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate it. You know, like you said, if it was that easy, then everyone would do it. Just to follow up what everyone else is saying, you know, when I bought a property from you and hoping to, you know, rehab it and then sell it, the other strategy you guys always told me is that you can't assume that it's going to happen at the time that you want it, so you can always rent it. So I have a property now that's almost approaching its year of its lease agreement for its rental. And I actually, throughout the year, I had a tenant, I would send them information about how to improve their credit score so they could potentially buy the property. So they actually, their credit score got better. They actually got approved. But now they want to buy a different house. So, like, you never know what they're going to, well, they may buy mine if I decide to lower the price. So I'm just waiting for my agent to get back on me.
Right.
But, you know, the idea is you never know what you're going to get, and there are so many different things you could do with it. Here's a question for you: If my lease ends at the end of January, and I still don't have a serious buyer, I could still rent that place month to month for them, right? And just you know, subject to you know a serious buyer, then they'll have to find something else. And
you absolutely could. But here's my question to you: Having said that, you put them in there as a tenant, and they were leasing the property from you, but you were also helping them with their credit repair. Did you have them under a lease option or just a lease?
No, just a lease. Never had
okay.
a lease option.
Okay.
It was something
here,
that I...
Here would be my suggestion to you is anytime you're going to help somebody to be able to buy a property,
I
would make sure that you have them under a lease option and they put up, you know, hopefully at least 5, maybe 10% of the purchase price as option money. And option money is non-refundable. You know, unlike a deposit, a rental deposit, they get that back unless there's damages. But if option money, it goes toward the purchase. So had you been able to do that, when it came down to this point and they're qualified, they've got some built-in equity in your house. So they're gonna be more interested in their situation in that they've got some built-in equity, which will help them qualify for a loan and maybe even a lower payment because maybe they don't have PMI, you know, mortgage insurance. So their payment would be even lower than them trying to go find another property and move out of your rental property, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
No, that's perfect. I mean, that's definitely, you know, going forward, if indeed I may even propose it to them and say, guys, if you're not ready to buy my property now or any other property, well, the next step will be is I'll rent it to you for another X amount, but it'll be a lease with the option. You know,
there you
maybe
go. You know, and I used to have quite a few rentals, but I would never lease a property. I always had lease options. You know, I never just did a straight rent. I always had lease options. And,
really?
Now, not many people, and I would do this knowing that not many people are ever going to follow through and actually close on the deal. And I knew that. But I have in my lease option agreements where the landlord pays for all structural and roof mechanical items, and the tenant pays for all the small items. In other words, it might be something like the landlord pays for all repairs $5,000 over, and the tenant pays for everything less than $5,000. So it's almost like they're not even a tenant in the sense that they're a homeowner in training.
Homeowner, I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's kind of cool. And I remember one of your videos, it's like you would do two separate contracts. One would be the lease and one would be an option. That way, if you ever had trouble with them.
Absolutely.
If I remember that correctly.
I do. And you did remember it correctly. We would always do a separate lease and option agreement. And that way, if you ever had to go to court, the judge is not looking at a lease option in one agreement and says, you know, this person has equitable interest. So, and it could be that the tenant brings it with them and the judge still says that. But if you have two separate agreements and you have a lease and an option and the option is void if the lease is in default, then that helps your case as well. And also just by virtue of there being two separate agreements, it really helps as well. And if they're in default of one, it defaults the other. But if it's all one agreement, it's a little bit harder to get them out through an eviction if they quit paying. And the judge may say, oh, this has an option, you know, combined with the lease. So this person has equitable interest. For you to evict them, you have to go through foreclosure proceedings.
Wow. Wow.
And you don't want to see
yeah.
You don't want to
That makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
And definitely. Thank you for re-explaining that, because I know it's back in my mind, so I just couldn't remember why you want both of them, but that makes perfect sense, you know, to protect yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Well, I hope that helped.
No, very much so.
Awesome. Anybody else have any questions?
I have a question for you, if no one else is at it, it's okay
sure,
with everybody.
No problem.
All right. You know, I have different people say different things, but isn't it smarter to get for your own personal, either for your home or for an investment home, to try to get a mortgage now, not only because interest is low, but if there is this runaway inflation that everyone keeps talking about, isn't it a way that mortgage, let's say you get a mortgage of $100,000, in 5-10 years, the $100,000 may be worth nothing, then you can pay it off, you know, much easier. But my only thing with that argument I see people say is, what if then everything else costs more? Everything costs more to fix, everything costs more, like gas, electricity. Have you heard, like, people say, it's your best time to get a mortgage now?
Well, anytime you can lock in a long-term, low-interest, fixed-rate loan, you know, I don't think you can make a mistake. Anytime you can lock in. Now, if you're talking about something that adjusts every 3 to 5 years or something, that's a different story. But anytime you can lock in long-term, low-interest, fixed-rate loans, I think that is a good thing.
Okay. Okay.
But that type of mortgage, do you make it portable?
It's hard to get a traditional loan that is portable. You mean that you can walk the mortgage to another property, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's very hard to do that with traditional lending.
Okay, so if you were to sell the house while you're locked in, then you'd have to have the mortgage to be assumed or pay a penalty, wouldn't you?
Well, your buyer would typically get new financing and pay it off. It's hard to get assumable loans this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And go with that logic that you just mentioned, because I just sold my home in Long Island, and I'm in the city now, so I'm looking to buy something for, as an investment, but also for personally. You know, should some say, you know, pay off your student loan, because I have so many, and then start building more equity later on to then put on a house. And others say, are you kidding me? When you get interest this low and your student loan's interest is so low, don't even bother paying that so aggressively. Might as well, you know, buy a place now. And you'll see that in time, because you're locked in such a low interest, you know, you'll reap the benefits of, A, your student loans getting paid later on, but then you also have built equity into your home, and you can enjoy the fruits of both. And I'm like, have you seen different sides of that argument as well?
There are. Some people want to be, you know, want to have everything else in line before they go out and get a loan. But, you know, when interest rates are low, you want to try to get, you know, as you know, you want to try to lock in that long-term, low-interest, fixed-rate loan. So
right.
There are arguments to both sides. I would just look at what are your other expenses and what kind of rates are you paying on them. And you almost look at your bills that you owe money on as you know, which ones do I need to pay off first? You know, how much is my cost of money? If that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't have magical powers to make homes in New York City the same price as they are in North Carolina. You don't have that skill set, do you?
Oh,
that's a good one.
That's a really good one. I like that.
I gotta try, man.
You know, I can help you get a very inexpensive house. All you got to do is move out of the city. That's a good one right there.
I
was just looking as we were talking, and right now today, a 30-year fixed is 4.15. A 15-year fixed is 3.21. Now, 1-year fixed, which will be adjustable, is 2.91, but I wouldn't go for that.
No,
I would go for the 15-year fixed is what I would go for.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, just to add to that, the 1-year fix that you're talking about, if somebody is going to look at that, it's really key. There are some really good deals out there depending on what index it's based on and what the cap rate is. So
that's true.
You can end up, for example, in a LIBOR loan right now where the cap is capped at 6 or 8%, but the interest rate is lower than a fixed. So somebody who has an opportunity to get one of those really needs to look at what the index is that it's based on and what the cap rate is.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just food for thought, because you can really leverage some good capital that way with investment properties on your primary residence.
So right now, a payment on a $100,000 loan, 15-year fixed at 3.21 is $700.73.
Wow, that's nothing.
You can't rent a place for that.
That's true. Now, look at what the difference is between that and a 30-year. Now, the 30-year is $486 a month, $486.10. It's almost five, so it's really $214 difference, $213, $214 difference, okay? But that's a difference of $213 for 15 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's washed away after 15, you know?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So what, that's 214 times 180? That's a difference of $38,000.
And the nice thing about that, too, is if somebody needed the lower payments to go into a 30, you can always self-amortize it to turn it into a 10- or 15-year mortgage 2 or 3 years down the line when your cash flow is better.
That's exactly right. What he means is, you know, just make the $700.73 payment, and you'll still pay it off in 15 years.
30-year amortization is really coming handy because when you're investing in properties, and, you know, some months, some years are better than others, and when you can afford to pay more, you pay more towards the 30-year mortgage, which buys down the years. And if you're having some lean months, you're not locked into a 15-year rate. So you can always buy it down. You can't buy it up.
That's exactly right.
And the small change in percentages is a small price to pay for the cost of money for having that invaluable option. At least that's been my experience.
And another thing that will help you get an additional little discount in the rate is a lot of times they will give you a little percentage of a point lower for automatic draft.
The bi-weekly payment. You're making 26 payments a year instead of
24. Or no, it's just it's automatic payment, like where they get direct pay from your bank. They'll give you an extra incentive sometimes.
And
that's correct. And they'll give you a further incentive if you have bi-weekly payments. So you're making 2 a month, except for 2 months out of the year, you're making 3.
Right.
It also accelerates the principal buy down on your mortgage as well. But it all adds up.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Well, you know, it's so important because, you know, I don't know, I can't speak for everybody, but as a physician, we don't have a retirement program. We just have a 401k, 403, which, you know, if you trust it, great. So it's just a savings account. So at one point, if you get a 15-year and you have, and it's all paid off, that, and you got a few of them lined up, that could be your retirement income, rental income could be your retirement income in 15 years, you know?
Exactly.
Do a few of those throughout the year.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Cool. Anybody else have any more questions?
Do you know, just in terms of PMI, is it still the industry standard? You have to put at least 20% down for a traditional loan, otherwise you get a PMI. And is it true that the PMI is now locked into 30 years if it's a 30-year mortgage as of April 2013? Someone just told me that. I'm like, oh, man. Did you hear about that?
You know, I'm not so sure about that, but I do know that, you know, every lender is different unless it's a regulation. So that would be something that as you applied for a loan, you know, you would want to ask them.
I think it was specifically for FHA. I think FHA, you only have to put, 3.75% down. So it used to be you have a PMI until you receive, got 20% equity in there or 5 years, whichever came first.
Now, normally after so many years, it'll be in your mortgage documents that after so many years you can apply for to have the PMI removed.
I think because of all the losses and all the stuff that happened through the economic crisis, they're now instituting it as a 30-year, and as opposed to giving you that option. But that's what I've recently heard.
So hey, Larry, what I've read a few months ago on that, for whatever it's worth, is the adjustment went from 20 to 25%, either down payment or equity in the property. But as Larry said, you're absolutely right, Larry. You actually have to petition. If you start out with PMI, whether you have 25% or more equity or an additional down payment toward the principal balance of the note, you have to petition the bank proactively to get it removed. They're just not going to do it for you unless the loan starts out that way. But the only change I heard about was 25%. In other words, the threshold was 25% instead of 20% like it used to be. But that's
right,
just what
right.
I read. You know.
Yeah, you do have to definitely apply for it. There's no question about that.
Makes sense.
Cool.
Oh, and just I guess just specifically, I'm sorry. Just what would you look for? I know you're not a big condo person, but I do live in a city, and I'm not a big co-op person. But I'm about to look at condos, you know, that I either may rent out or live in. It. What is other than just looking at the financial statements of the actual condominium? Is there anything else I need to look into to make sure that this is not only a good condo that people, you know, are paying their bills and the board is doing things legit? And also, I'm not going to be slapped with a 100% increase in my condo fees because they forgot to repair something or didn't pay certain bills. Like, how do I get those papers? And is it the sales agent that provides it, or is it that the building through the, what's it called, title insurance company that provides me that information?
Which information is that now?
When you buy a condo, let's just say in Manhattan, you know, and it's just say a 20 units, how do you know if the people that run that condo are not going to increase the maintenance from like $500 a month to like $1,000 next year? And how do you know if your finances are good? Like, how do I get that information?
You have to kind of look at each individual one. A lot of them now have an outside association that manages it. You know,
right.
Like association management groups that do that because they're, especially when you have places that may have had a lot of fraud or something like that, especially like in not California, but in Florida, there's a lot of association management groups. Yeah, because they have a lot of timeshares and stuff like that. But you just have to look at the documents in each and every one of them and see. And sometimes it's easy to get that information, and sometimes it's not, quite frankly. Another thing you want to look for, too, is you don't want to be investing in a condo association where the developer is still the majority shareholder of properties.
Okay, and
exactly.
And just clarify why is that? Because then basically can dictate who and what they buy to who.
Well, it's because the only reason in the world a developer would be a major shareholder or a major, would own more units. It's because he hasn't been able to sell the rest of the units, so he represents a higher percentage of all the owners.
Okay. And I guess in New York, I could just tell you a friend of mine personally, he has a co-op, and the co-op board is not a developer, but they end up, it's like a little nepotism. They hold the spot for their cousin, their uncle, whatever it is, and sometimes they don't have the best interest in mind, the people in the co-op board. And they end up charging, they make the maintenance more and more, but they can't justify what they're spending the maintenance, and that's because they're getting the other people who own the units to pay for their share. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So I have a friend of mine who just bought a condo that in the city that his taxes are going up by 200% because when he first bought it, he has a – it's a balcony, which you don't really have outdoors in the city that much, but it's like a nice terrace and everything. They reassessed that property with the terrace now, and they said now you have to pay an additional 100% because when we first assessed the property, we didn't take into account because we had no comparables of that outside balcony. But now we do, and now you have to pay this amount, and that's like that's eating them up, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I believe it.
And I have another person who has a house that, you know, the tax abatement is about to finish soon.
Right.
So like when they're looking to sell it, you know, it's nice when you have 15 years of tax abatement, but if you have one more year, it's all of a sudden you're going to have to take in the new taxes once that's over. So he has to sell it for less of a price because the tax abatement credit is not there anymore.
I believe it. I would just, it's still my opinion, I would just stay away from them.
Yeah, but I wish, but in the city, where are you going to get one? Or you want to buy me a house in the city?
Now listen, if you're going to live in it, that's one thing. If you're looking for investment, that's a different thing. If you're going to live in it, hey, go for it.
Gotcha.
But if you're looking at it for investment, you know, that's another one of those things where somebody else is in control of your investment.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Not
like
a whole lot different than buying a mutual fund.
Yeah, and I can't stand that. Okay.
Exactly.
No, that's very true. Very, very true. Okay. I appreciate that.
Cool, no problem at all. Anybody else have any questions?
Hi, Larry. I got another finance question.
Sure.
I just bought a empty two-family off HUD Home Store, and I bought it with my funds, and now I'm doing the renovations on it and hope to have it rented in about 2 months. But I started calling local banks and asking them about, you know, long-term, like a 30-year loan on it, whatever, because I'm going to keep it.
Right.
And they're saying, well, it's in an LLC. We can't, you know, you have to take it out of the deed out of the LLC. It has to be in your personal name because you don't have 12 months of rents on the property. And also that, you know, it's going against my credit, which means I'm only going to be able to do so many houses till I max out, you know, mine. And I'm just wondering how to finance it long term. If you have any suggestions on
that. Well, first of all, I want to say you're talking about whenever you're getting long-term fixed-rate finance and you can only do so many of them at a time, right?
Well, no. They're saying that I can't have the house in an LLC name, that I have to have it in my name and go against my credit. So, you know, as long as up to 45% of my income can be, you know, mortgage payment. So my personal house and this house, maybe one more, and then I'm at that 45%.
Well, when you're investing in single-family houses, yes, that's going to be true. Now, you might be able to deed the property into an LLC, but the loan is still going to be in your name. You're going to be a personal guarantor. You're going to sign personally, and they want to know that they can come after you personally, not just the property. So that's the reason they do that. Commercial is a little bit different. If it was a 5-unit and up, or a strip center or something like that, a mini storage or an office building, that would be a little bit different. But on single-family houses, they are going to qualify you personally. They're going to use your debt-to-income ratio and all that. And they'll only probably count about 75% of the rental to include in your income.
Well, they're also saying since this is I don't have 12 months of rent, they can't count any of the rentals. That just goes based off of my, you know, my W-2 income.
Is this your local bank?
Right. So I think what I'm doing is going to the wrong kind of bank.
maybe so. Also, another thing you might want to ask them is, what if I bring you a lease for 12 months? Will you let me count it?
Oh, actually, the wording they use, that may be true. Okay. Good idea.
Yeah, just go back and say, hey, what if I bring you a signed lease from a tenant, you know, that just signed a 12-month lease agreement?
Okay, that's a great idea. What about, I mean, should I be going to regular banks to get loans in the name of my LLC for my rental property?
Where do you live?
For Connecticut.
Where's the property?
Enfield, Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Is there a local RIA group there?
Yep.
Go to the RIA group and ask them who they're using.
Oh, okay, great.
Yep. That's always the first place I would check. Ask them who they're using to finance their deals, long-term financing. You know, could be there's somebody in there specializing in that, maybe a mortgage broker or something.
Right.
I'm not talking about a hard money lender, but, you know, like a mortgage broker.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, man, no problem. Anybody else have a question? Anybody? Well, guys, I really appreciate y'all being on here today. It was really cool, and we did talk about some pretty cool stuff, some pretty important stuff. So thank you, guys. I really appreciate your business. Look forward to working with you. And if you have any questions in between time, you guys know how to reach me on the phone, so don't hesitate to hit me up and let me know. And if you have any questions, I'm more than happy and to answer them anytime. And I appreciate your business and wish you the best. So if I don't talk to you before then, I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. So thanks
Thank
a lot,
you,
everybody. Have a great night.
You too, man. All the best, man.
Thanks okay, a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Hi, I'm Bob. Hello? Right there? Hello? No. I'm on a Larry Jones conference. They say there's somebody there, but I don't hear anybody. Wait, it started at 9 o'clock.